Hey there. We just wanted to take a quick moment here to tell you that everything we do, both on the Escape Collective Podcast Network and over at escapecollective.com, all those things are funded by our members. So if you're already a member, we are grateful. We really appreciate you being part of the community. And if you're not, well, we hope you will consider becoming one. It is thanks to the support of our members that we are able to do really everything that we do. So we hope you head on over to escapecollective.com/join. And you'll see that you can sign up for a monthly plan, or you can save a little bit of money and become a yearly member. You'll be supporting, well, this podcast and all the other podcasts. Placeholders, Wheel Talk, Geek Warning, the Pretty Serious Bike Racing Podcast. You'll also be supporting the website, and you'll get full access to the website with no paywall. So we hope you will consider becoming a member today.
Welcome back to the Escape Collective Tour Daily, everybody. I'm being oddly quiet again because we're being watched.
Yeah, we are. It's fine. We're used to it at this point. I feel little shame most of the time in my general day-to-day life and activities. But something about this quiet, almost campsite-esque restaurant where we are interrupting normal French holidaymakers and their quiet evenings. Makes me feel a little on edge.
Yeah.
They're here at a lakeside for a holiday. They've got a live podcast recording. Gratis.
Weirdly, we're about 5 kilometers from the Grand Colombier. Yeah, I would guess that most of these holidaymakers had no idea the tour even passed through this area today.
It's
yeah,
quite there's a sleepy hamlet, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a couple polka dots. We got polka dots over there.
There's some
stuff that was clearly thrown out of the caravan at some
point.
There's
a throwback
today.
Total Energies jersey over there, which is someone's been to the tour before.
Good
that
stuff.
That was one that I really wanted.
Really,
I 2019, and they were just not throwing them out to anybody apart from children and the elderly.
You should go barter. You have a shirt on. Trade.
Mine is an Escape Collective shirt.
Yeah, he wants that.
Which is worth much more than a Total Energies merch shirt from 2019.
See, right. when I saw that gentleman in the Total Energies jersey walk in, my first thought was like, that was a horrible jersey. No wonder they are a much better team now. Because that one sucked. That was like when they were still doing the whole Nicky Terpstra thing, wasn't it?
I actually think that jersey, that kit is better.
It looks like a toothpaste tube.
They were also called Total Direct Energies at that point, before Total Energies had a rebrand to make themselves appear less like a...
Direct?
Less like a direct like a thesaurus. Less like a company that was just screwing over everybody in all parts of the world at once.
Yeah. We will send our oil to Russia totally and directly.
Well, that was Johnny Long, and I am Kaylee Fretz, and you also hear Ian Trellor.
The dulcet here. Tones.
The dulcet tones.
And it's only dulcet when you do the English accent.
Oi, oi, then.
So since.
We come to you after stage 13 of the Tour de France, of the 2023 Tour de France, from Châtillon-sur-Chalaronne to Grand Colombier, which is the big mountain that's sort of looming over behind us, if we could see it. There's a bunch of trees in the way, unfortunately. But it is back there somewhere, and we had a great day. We had another sort of day of two races, the breakaway up front. We didn't think the breakaway would survive. I don't think the breakaway thought the breakaway would survive, but turns out Michał Kwiatkowski is still quite a good bike racer, quite a good climber. He held on to take a stage victory, Ineos's only stage victory of this Tour de France thus far. And they've had a pretty quiet tour, but they were happy today.
Yeah, they seemed as happy as like Ineos can be. I feel like sometimes they're a bit of an emotional vacuum. But
they had
like,
ice cream.
They had ice cream. Well, first of all, I saw like mechanics and soigneurs. They were pretty happy. They were like high-fiving and like dapping each other up outside the bus. On the bus, the light was reflecting weird. So for once, we could actually see inside the bus.
Which is rare.
And we watched Rod Ellingworth and a bunch of the other people allowed on the bus sharing ice creams.
What kind of ice cream?
I couldn't see. But when Rod Ellingworth finally descended the bus, ITV's Daniel Freeb, also the cycling podcast, before he started doing his interview, said to Rod, "Enjoy your ice cream, did you?"
That was a passive-aggressive question.
Sorry?
That was a very passive-aggressive question from him.
I take it on face value.
I do not.
I want to know whether they did enjoy their ice cream. Calippo.
Rod Ellingworth later in the interview did say that that was how that the support staff had celebrated, was with an ice cream. I like the idea that Kwiatkowski goes to Slim and is like, right, boys, crack out the mini magnums.
Well, we celebrated with an ice cream yesterday in honour of Jonny's gear.
We did.
Maybe something in it.
Who was our Jonny's gear? Oh, Harold. If Harold Tejada had one today, we would have got ice creams.
And he didn't, so we didn't.
No, we nominate a guy per day, and if they win the stage, then we get ice creams.
Yep. It's a great system, actually.
It is.
Yeah. So Kwiatkowski won. He held on up the Grand Columbia, which is a really difficult climb. It's a very difficult climb. I was looking at the Strava today because I'm thinking about riding it tomorrow morning, and the fastest as of this morning was Tadej Pogacar in 43 minutes and 43 seconds. I'm actually
going to refresh it and then
see. I'm refreshing.
What is it?
Well, Pogacar hasn't uploaded yet, but we have a new Pidcock went faster
What time?
Than last time. So last time the tour came up here, September 13, 2020, that was the COVID tour. Mm. Pogacar won the stage over Primoz Roglic. This is a big deal. Today, two riders went faster than that time, which was 43:43. 42:25 from Tom Pidcock and 42:41 from Sepp Kuss.
The caveat with these Strava times as well is that it depends how they obviously ride up the climbs, the wind direction. I mean, Caleb, you've been there on both occasions without a moment's hesitation to be able to tell us where the wind was coming from.
It was from the
star signs of the riders in the top 10 of Strava, just all sorts of information.
It's insane. We've got a little cycling shaman in our midst.
It was a tailwind for the sort of key straight bit of
from
climb.
What direction, Kaylee?
The south.
Thank you. No further questions.
Turns out, on the Discord, it's been a very divisive issue of whether Kaylee is normal or weird for knowing that, but
I'd say that the American response is split into two factions. The ones that are like, yes, this is the way that we do things, and they seem to be mountain folk. And the other ones, who are what I'll term normal folk, who are like, no, this is insane.
I'm sorry? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't apologize.
All right. Nonetheless, they went a minute faster, minute and a half faster almost than, we don't have Pogacar's upload yet.
Probably even faster.
But, I mean, he would have gone faster than Tom Pidcock. So, yep.
That's true.
He kind of by definition. in a pretty exceptional
so a minute
ride.
Faster.
About a minute faster than last time they came up. Again, like, this is why we're kind of going off topic already here, but like, there's people on the internet that like to do sort of climbing calculations.
Yeah.
And the implication is that if you've gone faster than some previous effort, in particular, if you've gone faster than some previous effort that was during the doping era, then obviously you must be doping. Like, on its face, it's sort of like, okay, you draw a line between those two points, and that seems like a reasonable assumption. Until you get into things like, is Tadej Pogacar meaningfully faster this year than he was in 2020? Probably not. Mm. Not, like, a full minute faster.
No.
And is Tom Pidcock faster than Tadej Pogacar was in 2020? Probably not. It just basically illustrates how much
race situation, the days of racing before.
The context
was
of
really
the
high
race.
Racing,
is
so that's, the face yeah, there's the all moon. These things. It doesn't prove anything.
The
like
wind, the face of the moon.
Yes.
The direction of the sun.
Yeah.
But also bikes have improved in the
not
last
in two,
two
years,
decades.
Though. Not in 2 years.
Oh, 2 years. Two
yeah,
years.
I'm talking about since 3 years. Since 2020.
I thought you were referring back to the Armstrong.
In the non-baggy jersey era.
No, but that's the other thing. Is like, you go look at jerseys.
Mid-2010s. Ian's squirrel story about Christoph. There's a picture of a Quebecer rider. And I wasn't really in cycling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't really into cycling in that time, or like didn't follow it as closely. But I showed Kay. I was like, they wore jerseys like this as recently as the year of our Lord 2015.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Baggy, and we thought
you
they were fast at the
you
time.
You could have hidden things in those jerseys that would have gone undetected.
And that's like, you know, at the speeds that they go, even climbing, it's a couple watts, and that makes a big difference. I'm not sitting here being an apologist for the doping era or saying that, you know, the sport is 100% clean right now or anything. That particular thing kind of bothers me because it's such bad information, right? Like, if you're going to get people for doping, don't do it in that way because it actually is completely It's not irrelevant. It's just, it's like one tiny, tiny data point without any context, and it just doesn't work.
What it does is detract from a level of healthy cynicism, and it like turns any sort of like normal questions into sort of the cranks and like chemtrail sorts of conspiracy that is useless and not worth anything.
Yeah, the people that tweet that stuff are the boy who cried wolf. Like they are, when you say that about every single performance, it starts just, well, it is absurd on its face anyway, and then it just loses any sort of impact. Regardless, let's get back to today's actual bicycle race. Pretty decent sized break today. Lots of roulers in that break, like Jasper Stuyven and riders like that were in that break, and then a couple pretty good climbers. The only two who ended up staying off the front were Kwiatkowski and Maxime Van Gils from Lotto Destiny, the closest Lotto has come to a stage win thus far. He finished 47 seconds back on Kwiatkowski, and then Pogacar finished 3 seconds behind him. Now, interestingly, as a result of Pogacar finishing third and Vingegaard finishing fourth, Pogacar gets 4 seconds of time bonus. If they had caught Maxime Van Gils, and I don't know if, I doubt Pogacar actually knew this at the time, although maybe somebody was in his ear yelling it, but I very much doubt it. But if he had caught Maxime Van Gils and had, if both of those two riders had passed him, so if they had finished second and third instead of third and fourth, Pogacar would have only gotten 2 seconds of time bonus because it goes 10-6-4, and the gap between six and four is 2 seconds.
Dream scenario would have been Pogacar in second, Maxime Van Gils in third, and then Vingegaard in fourth.
That would have been a full 6 seconds.
And it was pretty close.
It was very close.
But not quite close enough, about 20 meters.
Yep. That would have been the dream scenario for Tadej Pogacar, but I just found it, I had never actually sort of done the math before on, oh, actually, it can be better to get third
than second
in certain circumstances with these time bonuses. So he took 4 seconds of his own strength and then 4 seconds of time bonus. He takes 8 seconds back on Jonas Vingegaard, and the gap is now 9 seconds on the overall on Bastille Day, 13 stages into the Tour de France. That is...
It's wicked.
It's wicked. It is exceptional. I love it. It's so basically what has happened now, if we sort of back up through this tour, Pogacar lost, 63 seconds on that stage into Laurent, Col de Marie Blanc, and he sort of fell off near the top, if you remember, fell off the group. Vingegaard descended like a madman, very impressive, took just over a minute. Almost all of that time has now been clawed back over the course of a week that, granted, suited Pogacar better than it did Vingegaard. But we still have a full week to go.
Yeah, like and it the hardest is week.
The hardest week still to go. And if you just look at trajectory, it certainly looks like Tadej Pogacar is going to take the lead of this bicycle race and then extend it over the next few days.
Well, it depends, because both riders are saying the third week suits them, because you wouldn't say it otherwise, I guess. Maybe you would. I mean, today Jumbo-Visma were talking up Tadej Pogacar a lot, being like, this is perfect for him. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, you can talk about, like, everyone was saying that when Vingegaard took that minute on Pogacar, it's like, oh, he's done it already. Like, he's so much better. And then it flips, and who knows, it'll flip again, you know.
It's an interesting final week. So I kind of went through the stages that are coming up and tried to figure out which stage would work better for which rider based on sort of the overall difficulty and the finale and all the rest. This is making a couple baseline assumptions. The baseline assumption is that Pogacar is going to win any two-up sprint between the two of them. I think that that's basically been proven over the last week. The other assumption, though, is that Vingegaard is probably better over really long, hard climbs, particularly at the end of a hard day. Because, frankly, that's what we've seen so far. That's what we saw kind of on the Marie Blanc stage. It's what we saw certainly on the Galibier Granon stage last year. In general, that is the assumption. I don't know if it's the perfect assumption, but it's the assumption we're going to work off of. So we look at tomorrow. We've got bonus seconds at the top of the Jupelin, and then a descent into the finish. Now, Jonas Vingegaard, I think, has been better than Pogacar at descents. Do you guys agree with that? He was better on the Laurent Marie Blanc stage.
I asked this question to the wider group of our colleagues at Escape Collective, because I don't really...
They're probably pretty equivalent. My thought was basically, I think that if Vingegaard had to catch Pogacar, I think he would do so over the top.
Even
of
though he's a little scrap of a man.
Even though he's a little scrap of a man. It's mostly down to who breaks the least, not necessarily who's the biggest. So,
and the faster Vingegaard gets the finish, the faster he gets to see his wife and kid.
Also very true. So, you've got Juplin, bonus seconds at the top, sprint. Probably Pogacar takes it. And then they get, you know, they come together and reach the finale, and probably Pogacar takes it. So there's some available bonus seconds unless a breakaway goes. But nonetheless, in general, advantage Pogacar. Stage 15, we've got a bunch of bonus seconds and a Cat 1 climb up to Porto Soleil. And that's probably advantage Pogacar because the finale of that is actually relatively kind of not mellow, but mellower. And I don't think that either of them is going to drop the other. And so therefore, you've got Pogacar probably winning that little sprint, taking bonus seconds if they are available, taking 4 seconds if they are not. I have a sneaking suspicion that's the day that he takes the old jersey. 6:16.
Rest day.
Yeah, rest day.
Who wins the rest day?
I do.
I think Pogacar wins the rest day.
Yeah, but he is out there like making like content.
That's true.
It's not very restful. Maybe it's mentally restful.
No, I think Jumbo Visma are out doing some sort of soulless training ride.
Oh, or doing the
power meters.
And doing the videos of like, I love this sports drink or whatever. Primoz, was it Morton's for Primoz Roglic?
Yeah, it was really
we've done more advertising for Morton's by referencing that video than that video did.
We should charge them for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, stage 16. I'm going to get through this quickly. I do apologize. This is more in-depth analysis than we generally do.
Everything again.
Stage 16, time trial. Who do you guys think wins the time trial? This is a...
No one, because time trials are...
Sportsmanship will win.
It's got a big old Cat 2 climb in it.
Oh, I need to change my fantasy pick from Stefan Kung then.
It's hard.
Pogacar wins the time trial. Of course, he puts Jumbo Visma in a mental box every uphill time trial.
Yeah. Oh, so it's flat, 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 and then up, and then flatter. 22K, short.
I just hope the race isn't decided on the time trial, because I feel like that would be a big letdown of the whole thing we've got going on this race.
Yeah, I've actually put down in my little notes here that I'm calling it a draw, because I honestly don't know, and I don't think it's going to be that... I don't think they're going to be that far apart. Although that far apart in the scheme of this Tour de France could be like 15 seconds, could be enormous, right? But nonetheless, I really can't call that one. Stage 17, probably the hardest stage of this Tour de France. Col de la Loze, probably the hardest climb of this Tour de France. Finishes on like a bike path, basically.
The Miguel Angel Lopez climb.
Yeah, up at like over 2,000 meters. Very, very steep. Very, very difficult. I think this is probably the advantage Vingegaard day.
He's going to have to do something big day, yeah.
There's a bunch of climbs prior to the Col de la Loze. I think that Jumbo-Visma can make it hard throughout the entire day. I think they can use Sepp Kuss on the Col de la Loze to basically bring it down to just those three riders. And then Vingegaard has to try. And I think that's essentially his Grenal moment. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But that, to me, is kind of his number one opportunity. Because after that, we've got two flat stages, 18, 19. I shouldn't say flat. Flat for Vingegaard and Pogacar. They're not going to have anywhere they can go for those. And then stage 20, which is to Lamarckstein, which is going to be chaos. It's a ton of climbs. They're kind of punchy. In my mind, that is a Pogacar stage. But I also think almost anything could happen on that particular day. We could have a long-range raid. We could have something, you know, Wout van Aert getting up the road and Vingegaard bridging across to him. We could have all kinds of crazy stuff on that day. But I still think, in general, advantage Pogacar. And if I add this up at the end, and I've been chatting or talking now for like 5 minutes, and I apologize, we end up with Pogacar winning this Tour de France.
It'll be fun day theatrics, whatever. And what I'm looking forward to now is something happening tomorrow, which just completely derails all of the...
Everything I've just said. Yeah. Because you can't really predict bike racing. That's what's great about it. But if I sort of put my best analytical hat on, and I should say this isn't just me. This is us sort of chatting as a group, myself and you two and Ronan and Joe and all the rest.
Dane,
this is what we think is going to happen. This is what makes the most sense. Now, bike racing doesn't always make sense, so who knows? But that's what I think is going to go down.
I would say usually at the Tour, we kind of have a better idea of who's going to win like during the race, because there's like one rider identifies themselves as like the strongest, and then usually the strongest rider wins. But now, because it's so evenly matched, the whole discourse around it becomes a bit more like ESPN SportsCentery, where it's like you talk about cycling like the NBA or Good Morning Football, and it, you have to really break into the minutiae of like, oh, but you know, Tadej Pogacar did this and Jonas Vingegaard did that, and then while the riders are saying like, oh well, you know, maybe I win, maybe I won't, because they, those guys are, have already made their peace kind of with, they both won tours before, it doesn't matter as much to them as the fans, maybe, media, maybe, is that a weird thing to say? I don't know,
it matters differently. It, like part of the game for us is trying to guess what's gonna go down, right? And like Jumbo Visma keeps dropping hints. I mean, we talked to Sepp Kuss at the bus today after waiting for like an hour for them to ride back down the hill, and he was, you know, he said two or three different times like, yeah, we have a plan. Like there's a plan over there. We're just kind of waiting for it to be executed, and I do think that we know probably roughly what it looks like, because frankly, it's the same, probably going to be the same thing that Jumbo has tried a number of different times. I would love it if they surprised me. I'm just not going to hold my breath. They're going to make it really, really hard, put Wout van Aert or somebody else up the road, and try to essentially bridge Vingegaard across to him, and then utilize that duo to pull out a little bit of time on Pogacar. But I think fundamentally, given what the last week of this tour looks like, I don't think it's going to be tactics that win this Tour de France. I think it's just going to be legs, and I think one of the two of them is going to have better legs in one or two different places here, and that's what's going to decide this Tour de France. But the idea that they're going to go at it and go at it and go at it and try to make tactics work is certainly it's a tantalizing thing going into this final week.
I just had another T-shirt idea. I mean, we haven't made any of our T-shirts so far, but regardless who wins the Tour, I think a final day T-shirt that just says, "We have been titillated," would it'd be good. Maybe it doesn't work in like the wider context of life, but... just to wear it on the Champs,
it's a great word, though.
Yeah, and it's true.
Yeah. I feel exceptionally titillated by this Tour de France.
You talk about tactics, though, and I think UAE also have tactics. They use their tactics today. Their tactics worked well. They controlled the chase for the breakaway pretty precisely, with the exception of a rogue Maxime Van Gils and... a rogue Mikhail Kwiatkowski on a good day.
A rogue Maxime will get you every time.
Yeah, I am upset about the Maxime Van Gils erasure that's about to happen, because he finished second on a pretty good stage. That's not a storyline we're chasing. Sorry, Maxime. But anyway, I think UAE had a good strategy today and executed it pretty much to plan.
Yeah. Even though it gave Robbie McEwen a small aneurysm while he couldn't understand why they would be pulling over like 90 kilometers of race.
Yeah, I don't know why he couldn't understand that. I mean, Robbie McEwen, understatement of the century, slightly more accomplished cyclist than any of the three of us.
But probably saw less bike racing at the front end of mountain
but
stages.
That's the only thing I can think of, is that he wasn't particularly aware of what was happening in front of him during mountain stages. Because it was very obvious what they were doing today, which is that they wanted to keep it close enough, and they could, frankly, they could use like two roulers to do so, for guys that are not going to be helpful for another 4 days. They kept the break close enough to take bonus seconds, which it ended up giving them 4 seconds, and 4 seconds could decide this Tour de France. I mean, that's the tour we've got. It could be four
like
minutes the next week, but
Roglic,
it could also be 4
Thomas.
Seconds.
Yeah. Sorry, and I interrupted you. Yeah.
What it kind of underscored to me was that we've spoken a lot about the superiority of Jumbo-Visma as a team, but we didn't really see that today. We saw Sepp Kuss and Jonas Vingegaard versus four or five UAE riders, and then
it was like 5 of 17 at one point.
5 of 17. That's a pretty good ratio for one team. And speaking to Machin, the sports director, general manager, I can't remember exactly what his title is at UAE after the stage.
Gianetti's like the
big dog.
Gianetti's the big dog.
The secondary Machin dog.
Machin's like day-to-day running of it, and Gianetti's like the older, like, I don't know what you call it. Like not present? No.
He was pretty clear that their strategy had been executed to perfection. The plan was for actually today Pogacar to win the stage, so maybe not exactly to perfection, but apart from that, They planned for Adam Yates to attack when he did. They planned for Tadej Pogačar to attack when he did. It all kind of worked out for the UAE team playbook.
Why did Sepkus chase Adam Yates? Because there was only about 2 kilometers of road. He wasn't going to claw back that much time. Well, not even 2 kilometers. It might have been less than that. But is that just a don't let him get away just cause?
So Yates is currently in fifth, 5:03 down. And my guess was basically, one, Sepkus felt like he could. And in a lot of those situations, it's just one of those.
Might as well.
It's a quick decision. I can go faster, therefore I might as well keep the whole thing together, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think he was too worried about dropping his team leader at that point. They both could close that gap up. The other thing is that 5:03 back is like a comfortable amount back, but 3:03 or 2:03, or granted, he wasn't going to take that much time in the final 2 kilometers, but why give away any sort of time? Why let him claw back almost anything that potentially puts him back in the game and makes him a more useful sort of tactical pawn over the next week? So I think sort of basically kind of keeping him at arm's length is probably the big reason. The reason for sending Adam Yates up the road is probably basically the exact opposite, just to see partially what Jumbo would do, probably, to attempt to take a little bit of time back and to potentially get rid of Sepkus along the way was probably the other intention.
I hope they keep doing it. It's a fun little reverse Primoz Roglification.
Well, so if they're going to chase him down, that's a good thing for UAE to know, right? Because if Sepkus is gone, and as much as we love Sep and he's been exceptional this Tour de France, he does have off days, and we may just have a mountain stage coming up here where he's not there. And if he's not there, then Vingegaard has nobody, right? And so if there is a day when it's just Vingegaard isolated with, for example, Yates and Pogačar, it's good to know that they will bother to chase him because then they can use Yates to their advantage. So I think that's probably it's a bit of kind of cat and mouse, bit of poking and prodding, seeing what was going to happen. And then if they had let him go, then you might as well take the time.
But what if Sepkus and Chase to give UAE the impression that that's what he would do in a... Or are they not that?
You're playing 4D chess over here.
I'm trying to finish in third so that someone else doesn't get the bonus seconds.
It's important. All right, that's enough. That's enough. That's enough analysis.
We went serious.
We
that
went
was
serious there.
I mean, we got it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, because
got a lot of fun left as well.
Today was a really interesting day of bike racing. That's why. It's like, from a purely tactical perspective, that was a fascinating day because it sets up everything that's going to be happening over the next week. We've got some really incredible stages. I mean, tomorrow is going to be fantastic. I cannot wait for tomorrow's stage.
Again, I haven't looked at the profile
yet. So nasty. It's on brand.
Right, so there's a few orders of business. I've got one first. So today, press couldn't go up to the Grand Colombier, the summit. We were waiting down by the buses at the bottom of the climb. There were 2 car parks. There was one with most of the teams, but then there was a smaller car park with Jumbo, Cofidis, Ineos, Little Trek, and maybe another team that I've forgotten, but that might have been it. Oh, Astana were there. And while we were waiting for what seemed like an eternity, we came up with another little game of which rider would arrive back in the team bus parking area first. And I wrote down about 25 names because I got my quotes very quickly and then had not much to do while you waited for Sepkus.
Is this the game?
This isn't the game. I've got another game, but I think it's going to be too hard to guess. I think maybe you have each have a guess for someone who came in the top 5, and then I'll just run through, just not even for the enjoyment of the audience, because I think they probably don't care, but just for a statement on record.
I will say that this is unfair, because I was standing in the bigger, worse car park that was much more in the baking sun, waiting for UAE.
Yeah, but I wasn't paying attention in any way.
I was making sure that Katie wasn't paying attention.
I wasn't. I was over at the Jumbo bus chatting with Hoodie.
What I would say is the answers might shock you.
I know who the answer is for my side of
road. I'd like to know.
David Gaudu.
Oh, yes. Do you want to tell what else happened with David Gaudu, or is that not safe for podcasting?
No, it's absolutely safe for podcasting.
I think it's necessary for podcasting.
So David Gaudu was the first one into my car park, and it was my car park. Actually, no. There were 2 other riders into the car parks.
It was your car park until David Gaudu arrived. Then it was his car park.
Caleb Ewan was actually first into the car park, but he had quit the bike race and then
it doesn't count.
Climbed into the bus, and then I tried to press their press officer about why he climbed into the bus, and they didn't know. So that was good.
Okay. One of these days, teams are going to realize that if they, and riders, that if they drop out of the Tour de France and they give us like the sob story interview for 2 minutes and we get a couple quotes, then they get a really nice story about their exit.
Yeah, but they probably don't care, and they're probably so mad that they're just like,
they got to think further ahead. They're going to get a lovely story about the sadness of them leaving the Tour de France.
Quickly, Ian, before we move on to the thing, another person who didn't know something in our car park was Steve Cummings. He didn't know what was going on in the bike race as Kwiatkowski was en route to get in the stadium, because he was delivering Ben Turner back to the Ineos bus because he'd quit the bike race. So a lot of people not knowing things in the car park.
A tangent off that tangent is Adam Yates, when he arrived down at the UAE bus, turned to the media and he was like, I don't know anything. Nobody's told me anything. And then climbed onto the bus.
Oh, so he wasn't even asking. He was just like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
I've done my exercise.
I mean, this is why talking with riders after stages is like a bit silly. Like, really,
they can't really see straight, can they?
Yeah. And even directors sometimes, because they don't have any clue what happened.
Yeah.
Like, if it literally didn't happen right in front of them, they don't have any. We know way more about what happened than they did.
My favorite is sometimes when journalists will ask like a member of the like a guy who's won's team, like how it was and what happened. And they're like, dude, I was like 20 minutes down the road. I was further away from it than you were probably.
That happens all the time.
All the time. It's really fun when it happens.
Did that play out exactly as you expected it to? Was that the plan this morning?
I have no idea.
Well, I did my part.
I was trying not to puke. Sorry, Ian, you're...
Return to my tangent off your tangent, your great game, which I've derailed by talking about a different car park.
No, this is more important.
David Goudou was the first person back to my car park and rolled through the French media, who were very excited that he was there. Didn't talk to anyone. Hopped on the bus, had a shower. Thibaut Pinot, slightly behind him. I think that answers our question about the Groupama FDJ GC, which they're no longer 9-10, they are now 9-11. So a big loss for Pinot, which was quite sad. Anyway, Goudou came out after a shower and a change of clothes. Again, ignored the media. Went out, found his girlfriend, who was standing about like 15 meters away, and just made out with her in the most...
French
fashion.
You're just reporting the facts. It's not your fault.
I am reporting the facts. What I saw was David Goudou's girlfriend putting her arm up inside David Goudou's t-shirt sleeve.
What, her, like this?
Yeah. So that she was fully encasing his torso. It was stirring stuff. So anyway...
Have you ever been... I don't know, like near the exit of a French high school at like the end of school time.
Based on today, I hope never to be.
It looks a lot like that.
So David Goudou confirmed snogger. Good to know. We'll write that in our horrible little book of facts.
Snogging is a term that I was not aware of until I read Harry Potter.
Oh, that makes me even more unfeeling than David Goudou snogging.
Could you please tell me who was first in your car park,
yes,
Johnny?
Yes, please. Let's get this podcast back on track. Do you think there are people that... there must be two groups of people listening to this podcast. One who's like, I just want the serious, like, what they thought of the bike race. And others are like, nah, I don't care. Just like,
tell me more
madness
about how David Goudou was kissing.
Well, so in this particular episode, they're going to get... It's a pretty even split.
Yeah, it is.
So a bunch of people are just going to fast forward through the analysis part, and then everyone else will just turn it off.
We should
start
doing the thing
part
where you put like time gaps in the description just to help people. Okay, first back, Carlos Rodriguez. I'm just going to run through them. Carlos Rodriguez, Guillaume Martin, Jonathan Castroviejo, Jasper Stuyven, Simon Geschke, Wilco Kelderman.
Going to EF.
No, he's not. He's got a contract till 2025. Kaylee was trying to start vicious rumors this morning after seeing Papa Kelderman talking to ES Sports directors.
I'm pretty sure I saw Kelderman's dad. I think it was him. He had a Wilco Kelderman like in
BP. I bet it was just like Jens Voigt.
It was not Jens Voigt. Somebody related to or in contact with Wilco Kelderman was chatting with the EF directors today in a very familiar way.
Well, I saw Marc Soler's mum talking to Marc Soler. We've all got stuff going on, Kaylee.
So okay. We started a vicious rumor, which is definitely not true.
Well, you started it, and then when we debunked it, you've now just said it on the podcast, so that'll be fun. Wheel of Flits will be brightening up frantically this second. After Kelderman, the magician himself, the magician's apprentice, Egan Bernal, after the magician, Alexei Litsenko, Evgeny Fedorov, Omar Fraley, Mads Pedersen, Yanni Moscon, Naarten van Hooydonk, Daan Hall, Matthias Skelmos, Tony Gallopin, Tiege Benoot, Sepp Kuss, Cheese Bowl, Christophe Laporte, Anthony Perez.
You've just listed 25 names, and I don't understand what this means.
Sepp Kuss is just ahead of Cheeseball. That is...
This is the order that the riders arrived back in the car park.
I didn't understand that until now. I thought you were asking me to guess which one out of those was
no,
it.
No, that was the exact and order I was about to that say, the first 25 riders arrived back in
Lutsenko.
Our car
park.
Cheeseball descended like a madman.
Did he?
To catch Sepp Kuss, who finished like a half hour in front of him.
Maybe he needed more relaxing time, though.
No, maybe.
I'm sure that's what they call it.
I feel like this is one of those sort of sequences of data that we can take absolutely nothing from, but I'm glad that
we can start a well-liked Twitter page.
What I'm going to do is the next time this happens, I will then compile another list, and then over time we will
who
be
was
able
first?
To find it out. Carlos Rodriguez.
Do you think Carlos Rodriguez beat David Goudou in a romantic mood?
I mean, Goudou had more reason to get back to the car park.
I'm feeling good about Goudou.
Next time we'll compare notes. Maybe we FaceTime each other looking at the entry. Anyway, this is boring now. Should we go into our other corners?
I have no idea what this is. Yes, let's talk about some corners. Do we have Christophe Corner for today?
Yeah.
Or should we save it? Because we've talked about a lot today.
We've got some... Ian's only got a couple more days left,
it's
though.
It's true. Ian is out of here on...
I think
Monday.
You want to save the Christophe? Yeah. We have been speaking for quite a while.
Yeah.
I did bank some Christophe corners this morning.
Give a little teaser.
If anybody wants to see what Christophe Corner looks like, we've got a photo on our Instagram story at Escape Collective.
I was privileged to see the end of it, and Christophe walked away with a grin.
He was happy.
What you will see is two 36-year-old men bonding.
Two very different looking 36-year-old men.
We can save the Christophe Corner, but I will flag that there are 2 to 3 Christophe Corners to come.
We've only got 3 more podcasts.
Ian could just record them and then we play them.
I can do remote Christophe Corners.
That's a great idea.
I can stay up till 5 a.m.
No, we'll do it here.
No, you
we'll
just record them before you leave.
Ah.
And like we could record it as a segment and then play it in. Why are we telling them how we've produced this podcast? Yeah, and then we send it to Dane and he edits it and then he uploads it on all of the available platforms.
I don't sleep for the remainder of the month just so that the people get their Christophe Corners.
Very important.
I've got both of the other segments as well. I've got Mayo Sablé and the game.
Oof.
No, what do we call it? Oh, Daily Pain.
Daily Pain.
Daily Pain. That...
Pain for us.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, pain for us. Until that moment.
Pain we had a real, pain real difficult search for pain this morning, which led to us leaving our pain behind and a very angry French woman chasing after us with croissants.
So for rugby and American football fans, it's the same thing. It's like when you're handing off the ball, you're supposed to really shove it into their like gut area. And the woman did that with 3 almond croissants to me.
She did not want those almond croissants anymore.
We were not her croissant. Vibe. Right, Mayo Sablé.
Yep.
I haven't looked yet. Usually I look beforehand just so I can think of
some
facts.
How do you prepare the fun facts?
You just
I never prepare the fun facts.
You just have an encyclopedic knowledge of fun facts about...
Yeah.
Often I don't. Okay, we've got a new Mayo Sablé. 35th overall, 1 hour, 2 minutes, 35 seconds. Team, national... Who goes first, actually? Who goes it?
I think it's Kaylee's turn.
I think I'm first.
It's getting a bit easy. So I'm no team. You've got nationality. You've got first initial. You've got second initial. Or you've got a fun fact.
Fun fact.
They have in some way engaged with Escape Collective content.
Ooh. There's only like 3 options here.
I think
I know
the answer.
Not necessarily this tour, just in general, since the start of Escape Collective. In some way, they've shown that they are aware or...
Are they a friend of the of Escape?
I've given you the fun facts, Kaylee.
I mean, because like, okay, this isn't my guess, but Pierre Latour did laughing cry emoji.
That would count
us.
As a... That would count.
Is that an answer, Kaylee?
No.
That would count.
Don't... don't feel the waters.
He is feeling the waters. He's trying to feel the waters. He will not feel
all right, scandalous. Pierre Latour. Pierre Latour.
Incorrect. Ian.
Nationality.
Interesting you should say that. He's from bloody down under, isn't he?
Oh, no. Now I know who it is. Oh.
Jack.
Damn it.
Haig.
God it damn is it. Jack Haig.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he fell a place to get it, but I guess that's the beauty of the My Sabler. You lose and you win.
These are the prices they pay.
Yeah.
We should tell Jack that he is the current
Yeah, we should.
Because he would be into it. Yeah. Jack is a genuine fan of Escape Collective, an early supporter.
We don't know if he likes it. He signed up. Might be a hate sign up.
It just pays his dues so that we leave him alone.
Yeah.
Entirely possible.
Give me the money, now no more interviews.
No, we like Jack. We like Jack a lot. We think Jack likes us.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow when we ask him about winning the holding the Maya Sabler.
Do you think he knows what it is?
No, we'll definitely have to let him know, and then he'll be more confused.
I don't know. He might listen to the podcast.
Mm.
Some of them do.
Some of them do. Luke McGuire listens, so the UAE team Emirates press officer.
Larrick and Luke?
Oh, yeah, Larrick and Luke. Lucky Luke. Okay, the game.
Okay, I'm ready.
The game. Okay. So this
sorry,
is the daily.
So we have the Daily Pain, and then we have the game.
No, sorry. This is the Daily Pain.
This is the Daily Pain.
Okay. So this is Daily Pain. I'd just forgotten the name. The Daily Pain. So this is where we choose a topic, and the two contestants go back to back, and the idea is that the loser buys the round. Although we've drunk with dinner tonight, so maybe the person gets off scot-free.
Mm.
Maybe they get us our ice creams
maybe
tomorrow
when
Howard Harder turns that L into a W. So today's contest, gentlemen, who's first goes? It goes.
I don't remember.
Go first.
Don't you tell us what the contest is.
The challenger goes first.
I'm still the winner.
So Ian, you will go first. Yeah. And the category is riders in the Tour de France.
So far, so good.
We get at least a dozen.
Yeah, we're
going
to do that one when on the flat stage, 18 or 17, whatever it is. Riders at the Tour de France, who's the last number on their number is the number one.
I hate this.
So basically, team leaders, but like the team, the guy at the top of their team's eight-man squad.
Jonas Vingegaard.
Correct.
Tadej Pogacar.
Correct. Are we going to go in order, guys? Because that would be great.
David Godu.
Correct.
Egan Bernal.
Correct. That's the top four teams so far.
What other teams exist? I will say Roman Bardet.
Sorry, you just caught me mid-sip. Roman Bardet is correct.
Mathieu van der Poel.
Correct.
Peter Sagan.
Correct.
Oh man.
Mads Pedersen?
Incorrect.
Yes.
He is 86.
I think it's Giulio Ciccone.
Is it Ciccone?
Yes, it is. You've also had Jai Hindley, Mikel Landa, Gian Alaphilippe, Richard Carapaz, Ben O'Connor.
Hang on. I need to say a correct answer.
For
my win to be confirmed.
Oh,
is
no,
that
no,
correct?
It's first to lose. It's first to lose.
Originally, we said that he has to then get one right, but I think
Guillaume Martin.
He could go for days, that fella. You and him. Benim Gomez, Enric Mass. A lot of number ones have crashed out.
Yeah.
Mark Cavendish.
It's bad news.
Michael Woods, Simon Yates, Warren Buggy, the King of France, Caleb Ewan crashed, left the race today.
Yep. No crash, but just left.
Alexander Kristoff. Can't believe you left that in your locker.
Big boy Christoy.
Big boy Christoy. Yes.
Congratulations, Ian.
Thank you.
The run had to end at some point.
Is that 1-1-1 now? Everyone's got to win.
It is. It's 1-1-1.
It's 1-1-1.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is there... Well, no, because Ian leaves, so we can't have some sort of like Paris... You have to buy all the drinks in the duplex in Paris.
Well, that would be a brutal round.
I'm
because
not buying
like 15 euro for a shitty Heineken.
To watch Ronan sort of pilfer the stores of the bar. Anyway.
Well, congratulations, Ian. That was a good one. I like
also,
that.
Also, great performance from Ian.
Yeah.
In the past few days, he's learned French. What else have you, overcome
a hacking cough.
The French is really quite phenomenal.
Yeah, actually. I don't know what's happened.
He's just all of a sudden like whipping out French. Like
conversational French.
Yeah.
he said après-vous after letting you through a door earlier.
I know.
It was sarcastic.
But still.
Still fluent.
All right. We need to get over to Jose Bain before we wrap up. We are about to be in the Alps. We're not actually in the Alps yet.
Soon.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow in the Alps.
Oh, tomorrow.
Yep.
It's a very adjacent mountain range.
Yeah, because we start in Annemasse and we finish, which is like near Geneva, and then we finish way up in the mountains in the Alps tomorrow. So we are going to look at winter sports.
Okay. Like skiing?
I would assume so.
Is this another game?
Let's
skeleton.
Let's find out what Jose's got for us.
We have entered the realm of Alpine cheeses. I have told you before about reblochon, so I will leave that this year. Not for real, of course, because a year without a reblochon is a lost year. There's so much cheese to enjoy in this region in both summer and winter, and cheese is an important part of the diet of skiing and the snowboarding part of the population, of which I am not a part. Sports involving gravity and slipperiness are bad for my health. For me, just the cheese, thank you. Anyways, where we now race today is where we find the ski slopes and après-ski during the winter time. I'm sure the après-ski will survive, but skiing in the Alps is becoming more problematic every year due to climate change. Around Christmas last year, half of the French ski resorts were closed due to a lack of snow. This goes especially for the lower areas like Mont d'Or in the Massif Central. But the resorts in the Alps also had to postpone the start of the winter sports season in 2022. It's a global problem. According to the president of the International Olympic Committee, Thomas Bach, by 2050, between 50 and 60% of winter sports areas in Europe will no longer exist. The IOC fears that winter sports will also disappear with the ski resorts. It was decided this year to make real winter weather a condition for the allocation of the Winter Olympics, unlike China, where the snow was mostly man-made. The problem, there are only a handful of suitable cities left. Back to the French Alps. Winter sports are big business. There are around 10 million tourists coming to France or from France to the ski resorts in the Alps. It's a 10 billion a year business with over 120,000 jobs involved. At the moment, it's the ski areas at a lower altitude that face being closed down. The ski station of La Sambouille, where we will pass on Sunday, decided only last month that it will cease operations. The three ski lifts will be dismantled, and many ski resorts face the same fate. Like many areas in the French Alps and across Europe, it's not profitable to keep the infrastructure going when there is no natural snow. When there's no snow, there are no tourists, making it even less profitable to keep the facilities open. It's a catch-22 situation. The result is that these resorts might become like the ghost towns we see during the summer cycling, but then in the winter time as well. The bigger and higher areas can try artificial snow, but even then, you need temperatures around freezing to keep the snow, snowy. Using snow cannons leaves a big carbon footprint. It costs lots of water and energy to keep the slopes white. And you can't fill the water reservoirs in summer anymore because the summers in France will become drier and drier as well. It's a vicious circle. The ski resorts will gradually have to shift their business focus on other things than just the winter sports. Cycling is one of the growth markets, but also wellness, hiking, ecotourism, and a focus on the local and regional food culture, which brings us back to cheese.
we are now going to wrap up for the day. And Ian's going to finally eat the creme brulee that's been sitting in front of him for like half an hour.
I managed to snaffle my dessert in between spouting nonsense while you two have let yours melt. You've done it for the good of the podcast. I was not being that generous.
I talked way too much in the first half of this podcast.
So. I've stabbed a little wafer in through the crust of the creme brulee like a birthday candle to a party I'm not invited to.
Yeah, no, Kayleigh, I didn't really... just to do a live review of the podcast just recorded, I really enjoyed your 5-minute predictions of what's going to happen in the bike race. This proved that we've been watching too much GCN in the car on our transfers, because that's what they talk about on their commentary.
That's very true, yeah. Although we took it a step further, I think. It was even worse.
Yeah. Because we pretend to do other things and then we just revert it back to that.
No, because people want to know what might happen. That's just what I think might happen. It won't happen that way, just to be really clear. Never does. But it's fun to think about.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right. Ian wants to eat his dessert.
We will be back tomorrow from...
Yeah, where are we going to be?
Frick stage is it?
Stage 14.
Morzine. We're from Morzine. Oh, going to Morzine.
Oh, great.
Morzine. Morzine, Le Port du Soleil, which is right outside Morzine, basically. We're staying in a little Airbnb right there.
I told you this the other day, I once drove all the way to Morzine from London with my family for a family holiday and listened to the Shrek soundtrack from start to finish multiple times until we arrived.
Somebody once told me the world is going to roll me.
I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed.
We won't get into the second line. I think that was enough.
All right. Bye, everyone. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the problem. We do too much serious stuff. It will just get derails everything.
We'll bring it back to normal tomorrow.
Maybe.
Bye.